Welcome back to the second half of The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Mexico is only 150 miles from San Antonio, about a two-hour car ride. Once you cross the border into Mexico and start digging into the underworld, it's hard to get your bearings. What's real? What's just gossip? What if you found out that your name is on the hit list for the Zetas, a group of drug smugglers notorious for their bloodthirst and brutality, who use rape, murder, and violence like a tool? Well, that's what happened to reporter Alfredo Corchega, Mexico's bureau chief for the Dallas Morning News. He writes about his experience in his book, Midnight in Mexico, a reporter's journey through the country's descent into darkness. The number to call to join our conversation about Mexico's drug war, 614-8980. If you have a question or comments, you can email us at thesource@tpr.org. Now, our guest, welcome to The Source, Alfredo.
David, thank you for having me on the Source.
Well, thank you. So not only do you tell the story about your name on that hit list, but along the way, as you react to it, you tell us about Mexico's history, politics, culture, the wonderful people, the heritage of betrayal, but the love of the land. We also learn about you, your amazing story, your father starting out as a Rosetta worker, you a child migrant working in the fields, your climb into being a great American foreign correspondent reporter covering your motherland. And then, you know, you interview the new president of Mexico, Peña Nieto, and he asks you a question. What does he ask you?
He asked me how my family voted in Durango, which really caught me off guard. As you say, yes, I'm a son of Mexico. I was born in Durango and still have very deep roots there. Grew up in California and later US, along the U.S.-Mexico border. But he wanted to know if they had voted for him. And I said, I know my family in the States, if they did vote for you, it was more because of your wife than it was because of you.
She's a soap opera star.
Yeah, Angelica Rivera, a very popular soap opera star in Mexico, and obviously through the soap operas in the United States, well-known, well-loved on this side of the border.
And the president was kind of probing you to find out, are you an American or are you a Mexican?
Exactly. Which is something that I guess a lot of us, ask me all the time. I ask myself that, you know. Sometimes I'm in Mexico and I really crave living in the United States and vice versa. It's a constantly juggle, you know, on both sides of the border.
Your book, Midnight in Mexico, you really put us in your shoes as you do your job, and you're one of the best at it in covering Mexico. And also you take us through your own incredible history and your family. I just think that this book is going to I think it's a must read for anyone who is interested in the drug war and also covering it. And so as you found out you were targeted on the list, and how did that come about?
This was July 2007, and I had just been notified that I had won the Maria Moores Cabot Award at Columbia. Days before that,
that's a huge award, by the way.
It's a huge award. Columbia University. It's some people know it as the kind of the Pulitzer Prize for reporting in Latin America. I was obviously quite honored, and had been doing interviews mostly on Spanish radio. And just days before, I had done a story about a peace pact that the cartels had reached with themselves, other cartels, and also with the Mexican government. The day of that we're having a dinner, a colleague of mine at the Houston Chronicle at the time had organized a dinner, and people were flying in. Just minutes before we left for dinner, I get a call from a U.S. trusted source. And keep in mind, before this, I had received other threats, but when you cover organized crime, you quickly learn that that's just part of the game. But to get a call from a U.S. trusted source to say, hey, there's a threat, the Zetas want to kill or are going to kill an American journalist within 24 hours, three names came up. Among them was a colleague of mine, Mariano, at the San Antonio Express News, and another colleague at the Laredo Morning Times.
And Mariano was stationed in Laredo.
In Laredo. But my source says, I think it's you, and I would get out. You know, where are you now? I'm in Mexico. I'm in Mexico City. I'm in my apartment. And that just started a whole, I guess, a whole journey to trying to understand what had become of Mexico, and also try to understand why did I feel so betrayed by Mexico.
So you are, you take us through the drug war and how things became what they are now, and how parts of Mexico are become a lawless land, and you feel like how do we get here? And you kind of walk us through it to the reader through it, and it's a primer in this drug war that's directly impacting San Antonio, because San Antonio keeps coming up again and again in your book, as does Laredo.
Right. You know, looking back, I guess the drug war has always, or the drug characters, the whole phenomenon is something that's always been there. It's always been part of life, 30s, 40s, etc. But it's something that I think many Mexicans, including myself, kind of try to look the other way. I mean, I knew growing up in El Paso and along the Mexico border, El Paso Juarez, I knew that they were there. I knew they were shady characters. I mean, we had a little restaurant called Freddy's Cafe, and we knew these customers and, you know, people going back and forth. But we also knew not to ask too many questions, to try to kind of look the other way. As a reporter, I even promised my parents that if I ended up in Mexico City, I would not cover that issue. At one point, the Dallas Morning News had probably, I think it was the biggest bureau of any U.S. newspaper. We had 13 people there, including Bilo TV, Angela Cuchergo, our bureau chief. Suddenly, you have the economic crisis, and we are pared down, and it's one. So I was essentially had no choice but to cover the drug war. And it really began, I guess, for much of the five generations, six generations, it was really an accommodation between the old ruling party, the PRI, and drug cartels. I mean, they kind of had an agreement, understood each other. We take drugs to the United States, and we help you with, you know, we help you with bribes, and you look the other way. And the government's, I guess, stance was just don't make too much of a mess. Just don't... Don't kill too many people. Don't make the violence so obvious. In comes in 2000. There's a changeover of power. Vicente Fox becomes president, and there's a political vacuum. Suddenly, those accommodations are no longer there. Suddenly, the power goes from the federal level to the state level, and it's really the governors who are now negotiating or trying to negotiate with these cartels, and many of them are, you know, in the end, they become overwhelmed. I started covering this in 2003, 2004, and as you said, what really opened my eyes was to see the situation in Nuevo Laredo, Laredo, to see the connections, see the whole I-35 corridor, you know, stuff going into San Antonio, Austin, Dallas, and beyond. And that's when I thought, you know, I'm like a lot of Mexicans. I wanted to rather see the beauty of Mexico and not really face the underbelly, but by that time you couldn't help but to look at it. And obviously, here we are years later. 100,000 people have been killed or disappear, and it's still going on. Even as the new president tries to change the narrative, I mean, the issue is still very much present.
All right, so we're going to dive some more into that and what the drug war, what could happen next. The number to call to join the conversation, 614-8980, 614-8980. For you're on The Source on KSTX. We'll be right back. And welcome back to The Source on KSTX. We're talking with Alfredo Cortado. He is the author of Midnight in Mexico, A Reporter's Journey Through the Country's Descent into Darkness. He's also the veteran reporter for the Dallas Morning News, been covering Mexico, much recognized, has been, won many awards for his coverage of Mexico. He's broken many stories. He's considered like one of the guys about to figure out what's happening in Mexico. And as you tell your story in the book about you being named as a possible target by the Zetas for elimination, you also talk about other people in Mexico who are finding out that they have run afoul of the drug cartels, and they have moved into like Laredo and other parts into Texas to find a new life. And what's their stories?
It's the exodus. I mean, one of the things I remember very vividly was when I began to cover this story, I would fly back to Mexico City, and my friends are people in, you know, Polanco, the Condesa, the Roma neighborhood, some of the high-end neighborhoods, I would say, hey, this is there's something bad happening in Mexico, and Meridian would say, well, you know, this is a problem isolated to the U.S.-Mexico border. It's a Texas-Mexico problem. Over the last few years, we've seen this tremendous exodus of the high-end elite Mexican who's seeking refuge in places like San Antonio. I mean, San Antonio.
Yeah, we're called impresarios. Is what we're called.
Impresarios, exactly. The impresarios who suddenly had to take their families outside of Mexico, and many of them started the commute back and forth, you know, Monterrey, Mexico City, and other places. But that became the whole phenomenon. I think that's really what led to many Mexicans, you know, to open up their eyes and say, wait a minute, this is no longer just isolated to the Texas-Mexico border. This is affecting everyone.
And are they fleeing? I mean, they're putting down roots here. They're buying businesses. It's not just, I'm going to hide out in San Antonio or Laredo until the blow's over. I mean, they are definitely moving their capital over here. And this could be the next generation, like similar to after, you know, during the Great Revolution.
Exactly. I mean, we saw that same phenomenon in El Paso, Juarez, and San Antonio and Mexico, where people left. And I think many of them thought, okay, this is a temporary escape, and then you set roots down. The kids no longer want to go back to Mexico. The spouse says, you know what, it just doesn't make any sense. And I think that's really one of the biggest tragedies is when Mexicans themselves give up on their homeland, when they say, you know what, it's over, I've had it, because, as you said, all the capital that they take with them, all the years of knowledge, the education, and et cetera, that is, I think, one of the biggest worries that Mexicans have today is what happens if this country does come back and does find a way to lower the violence. Can we get these people back in Mexico?
Does it become ungovernable?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, many of these people were victims of extortion. Many of them have been kidnapped. And many of them were just afraid that their kids would be caught in the crossfire.
The number to call to join the conversation, 614-8980. Let's go to the phones. John wants to join us. John, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. I had a question about the history of the 2000 election that you mentioned. Both Vicente Fox and George Bush were elected that year. And as I remember that time and reading history, is it true the Bush administration went into Mexico and arrested a key cartel leader and imprison that person in the United States, and that this may have contributed to some of the increase in violence along the border?
All right, John. Thank you for that. Thank you, John.
That's a great question. And John is right. I mean, this is what we're talking about. Ociel Cárdenas Guillén, who was arrested, it was 2003. And, in fact, he's the guy who was the leader of the Gulf cartel and very, very savvy businessman. You know, in 2000, he finds out that, late 1999, I think it was, he finds out that some elements, elite forces of the Mexican army were being trained by members of the U.S. government. And instead of taking them on, he says, hey, what's your price? How much do I have to pay you to jump, to desert? 35 members deserted. They became his own private army. And when he was captured, it really led to another vacuum at the Gulf cartel. Eventually, the Gulf cartel and the CETA split up, and now you have this big rivalry and this big war that broke out just across the Texas border. So I think sometimes when you capture these big cartel leaders, it only leads to much more instability.
So you told us about how the PRI, which controlled Mexico for 71 years, and then they lost with PAN because Vicente Fox became president. Now we've got the PRI back in power with Peña Nieto, and a lot of people voted for him because they really wanted to have that stabilization put back in place, and maybe we can get the violence down to a level where it existed before. Is that right? And is that working?
That's exactly right. I mean, we had done some polls leading up to the elections, we, the Dallas Morning News, and found a significant number of people who said, look, we're voting for the PRI again, not necessarily because they wanted the PRI back in power, not because they liked Peña Nieto, but really because they wanted a return to some stability, and they wanted to see the violence come down. Peña Nieto has been in office since December 1st, and if you hear the rhetoric, if you hear the campaign, you know, the whole, I guess, public relations campaign that's going on right now, you would think that Mexico has changed, that they've turned the corner. In reality, the number of people of dying are still very much the same. I mean, that hasn't really changed. Government claims there's a 14% drop. But if you talk to other analysts, they will tell you it's really the same thing. I mean, if anything's changed, it's the places where people are being killed. It's no longer Ciudad Juarez, although Juarez is still suffering from some violence. But it's other places like Estado de Mexico, which is right near Mexico City, Guerrero, Michoacán, other states. So the conditions for this happening remain the same: poverty, the conviction rate. 95%, 96% of all crimes are never solved. That means if you're a young kid, young teenager, it pays off to be a hitman. You know, you may not live long, but you will make some money in a very short time.
And there is a culture glorifying that lifestyle popular on the social media. And social media is being able to fill in the gaps where the regular news media is not able to do in Mexico these days. Can you talk about that?
That's a great point. We are seeing, you know, many regions in Mexico where reporters have been forced to self-censor themselves, or just, you know, some have been killed. So there's a lot of fear, and social media has come in to try to fill that vacuum. It's a tricky situation, because oftentimes the cartels may play a role in using social media and in trying to get their message across. So it's, you know, it's sometimes it's very difficult to understand what the truth is.
And then they will target popular bloggers as well.
Some bloggers have been beheaded right in Nuevo Laredo. And it's basically sent a message to people, you know. This is our town. We control this community. We control the media. That's one of the things about the Zetas that they've been so good at, is controlling the message. I don't think we've ever seen another cartel that can do that the way they do it, by scaring the wits out of you.
So your book, is it just this dark, gloomy story without any hope?
You know, David, when I wrote this book, that was my greatest concern, is I didn't want to write a dark, gloomy book, you know, and I know Midnight in Mexico, but it's really about a son of Mexico looking for that flickering light and believing in the promise of a new day. And I think, looking back over 20 years, I've seen how Mexico has changed. I think sometimes during the worst moments, the darkest moments, you also see the best of Mexico. And I've seen a very resilient Mexican spirit. I've seen people do very courageous things. I've seen people trying to, you know, lay claim to their homeland, and they're trying to build a better country, rule of law, et cetera. So I hope that as people read this, I mean, it's a time and a place when Mexicans stood between dread and hope. But it's also about them transforming, changing, rebuilding their country.
So, you know, here in the United States, we have so many people of Mexican descent, people who have moved or recent expatriates. Can they have a role in trying to reform Mexico, similar to the way, you know, the Irish worked to try and reform, you know, make an Irish peace process in Ireland, or the Jewish community with Israel? You know, you can have a role if you don't live, even if you're an expatriate.
That's an excellent question, and that's something that I talk to a lot of groups, you know, say, what can I do? And a lot of, I think, Mexican-Americans are in this incredible position to try to do something. The Mexican government for the last 10, 15 years now has been trying to build this this bridge through the Interior Secretary, where they're trying to reach out more to Mexican-Americans. And at the same time, during Hillary Clinton's stint as Secretary of State, she did the same thing. So there's an ongoing effort to try to do what the Irish did many years ago, and also to do what the Jewish community does on an ongoing basis. They're trying to build a political bridge where they can lobby, influence, and trying to make sure that Mexico remains on the list of priority for Washington, D.C., and for Austin.
But still, what happens in Mexico is it's still very dark and mysterious. Even if you live on the border, like in Laredo, you can look across the river into Nuevo Laredo. You can hear the shots being fired or the sirens going off sometimes, just the commotion. But you dare not cross the border and investigate on your own. I mean, how do we, you know, go back to where it used to be when I was a reporter. You know, I could just walk across and investigate and have no worries.
There were times, you know, I go to Ciudad Juarez or I go to Nuevo Laredo, and I think, you know, this is a very normal situation. Are we making too much of this? And then suddenly something happens. And I think that's the scariest part of it, is it's so unpredictable. You walk into Nuevo Laredo and you see these halcones, who are the lookouts.
Yeah, the falcons, the ones that just stand on the bridge watching who comes, who goes.
Right. Alfredo, they have thank you. Little walkie phone, you know.
Yeah.
David,
well,
thank you so much for the praise.
Appreciate it. I miss it. I miss those days of Mexico. Alfredo Contreras, thank you so much for joining us on The Source, and we'll be back tomorrow with another edition. Tune in.
The Source is a production of Texas Public Radio. Paul Flav produces the show. Oversight is provided by TPR Program Director Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR Web Editor, and production assistance comes from Catherine Dixon. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.